Hello, welcome to another Music on Eye Focus with me, Music on Eye's editor, Joe Sparrow. And in this episode, we're joined by Cliff Flue, someone who's worked with or advised music AI platforms for a decade. And we spoke to him about the bigger picture possibilities and repercussions that AI could have on the music industry. It's a really good conversation, so stay tuned. Now, each Music on Eye Focus episode analyzes one meaningful music business story at a time, just like this one, and so the podcast is also going to be quick. It should take about the same amount of time as Yuki Yoshinaga could roll a football from eye to eye 8,220 times. Yuki rolled one back and forth 137 times in 30 seconds in 2021. Now, talking about keeping your eye on rapidly moving things, Cliff is a man with a lot on his plate. He's the joint head of media and entertainment at law firm Lewis Silkin. He's MD at 11 Advisory. He's chair of the Ivers Academy Trust and vice chair of Help Musicians. He's also got deep experience working with companies in the AI music space, advising on all the various legal and business considerations that inevitably crop up when the music industry and AI come together. So we wanted to take the chance to talk to someone who really knows his AI onions and move the conversation along a bit from the basic legal questions to the bigger implications of it, and talk about whether the music business is really prepared for the true impact of AI. We also picked his brains to discover some of the applications of AI in the music industry that you might not have considered. Right, so let's go and see what Cliff had to say. Well, I'm delighted to welcome Cliff Flue, partner at Lewis Silkin, to the podcast. Hi, Cliff.
Hello, hello, Joe.
Great to see you as always. Now, we're having a chat here today about the sort of the bigger picture possibilities of the use of AI in music and the repercussions it could have on the industry of music. But first of all, can you give us a brief introduction for anyone who doesn't know you? What do you do? Who are you? And what has been your interaction and activity around AI and music?
Well, so my name is Cliff Flue. I wear a few hats. I describe myself as a wearer of hats. The most relevant ones, as you mentioned, I'm a partner at the law firm Lewis Silkin. I'm also the managing director of an advisory firm, 11. With those two hats, in my legal curious life, I've been advising at what some call the so-called cutting edge of creative AI and music for what's almost a decade now, on legal issues, on commercial issues, and corporate finance issues as well. So across the space. And in fact, it's nearly that long since I first mentioned this subject to your erstwhile colleague, Stuart Dredge, on a podcast, to nervous giggles, where he said, right. Oh, do you think it's going to be a thing, Cliff? And I said, yes, Stu, I think it's going to be a thing. And since then, I've advised many of the leading companies in the space, companies like DukeDeck, AI Music, MyPart, Rota, Humtap, Seaworks, Darcy, Afrorhythmic. And I have spoken globally on this subject and for a very, very long time to varying audiences of varying skepticism, anger, disbelief. But I think it's safe to say it's a thing. And culminating at the wonderful Music Ally Next panel this year, which is why I think I'm here.
Yes, that's right. It's Cliff, who, by the way, just for the benefit of people listening at home, is not wearing an actual hat, even though he wears many of them, just to confirm. But yes, so Cliff spoke about Music AI, and you chaired a panel at the Music Ally Next conference earlier this year, and it was really fascinating. And so I collared him and said, come on the podcast and expand on that. And so you've had this very long and deep connection with music-related AI. I will chase up with Stu on his decade-old skepticism. But let's get a little bit of clarity around that, because music AI is a huge umbrella term. It means a lot of different things. You've mentioned a bunch of companies there that use AI in very different ways. So when we say music AI, what are the sort of, for the purposes of our conversation here, and perhaps the listeners looking forward when they think about it, what are the sort of broadly different applications we should be thinking of?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the great thinkers in this space, Eliza Yudakovsky, the father of good AI, he says that the by far the biggest danger about AI is people conclude too early that they understand it. So I don't want anyone to feel silly or stupid for not understanding it. As a phrase or a term, artificial intelligence, it's as useful or helpful as terms such as digital or cyber or electric in many ways. dependent on where you are in the spectrum of understanding, as it were, they mean very, very, very different things. And we as the music industry, as the record industry, we do have a bad habit of othering technologies, reducing them to their technologies. So, you know, MP3 or something like that, in order to be able to other it and move it away. But, you know, particularly the record industry, it's an industry born of technology. Not affected by technology. We've been evolved and brought from that. So really, people shouldn't feel that they, you know, get confused, therefore they don't understand it. It is a confusing term. The other thing I would say is that AI feels existential to human beings. You know, it's something that people worry about, and often for really, really good reasons. You know, some people say it is an invention and innovation as existential, you know, defining as electricity, or some say it's the last ever human-only invention, that actually all inventions from now on will be assisted by AI. So it's really big stuff. It's really, really confusing. And you've got this last bit of it, of how it goes into the world of creativity. How does it impinge on how we understand it? So this is one of the reasons why it's very, very confusing. It's very scary. It's very, very dangerous. But the way that I think we should be thinking about this is probably the most consequential tool that the music industry could use. And actually, rather than being seen as a problem, it could solve a number of our biggest challenges. There are a huge number of applications in solving those sorts of problems that we have as an industry as well. And if you're going to get confused by large language models or narrow AI or neural networks or generative AI or generative pre-trained transformers or all these things, as it were, it's all okay. Let's just focus on what these incredible tools can do for our industry and solve the big problems that we've got and how they can, you know, sort of evolve our industry into the next century.
It's strange, isn't it, AI? Because it is of humans, it is trained on humans, and yet it's sort of then partners with humans. It's distilled human essence working with humans, and then something will come of that, I guess. And you know, and of course as well, like you say, it's complicated to get to grips with, because it's being bandied around as a sort of shortcut in marketing terms at the moment, and it's hard to see the wood for the trees sometimes. So let's think about some of the implications that you mentioned there. Then it's clear that AI isn't going away. That sounds, you know, ridiculous to say, even suggest now. But the explosion of availability and usage of AI in the last 6 months has made that clear immediately. So if we could dig into a couple of those use cases and music AI sectors, can you explain what a couple of examples of those big picture implications might be? What, you know, getting past the fear and getting past, like, I would say, petty legal threats, what are the real implications?
Yeah, well, look, let's be positive. Let's just, you know, let's look at the let the glass be half full here, Joe. As I said, this could be the greatest tool we've ever seen. You know, if we think about what recording or the gramophone or amplification did to our industries, this could be really, really positive. So what are the things that consumers want? What are the things that platforms want? What are the things we can monetize? So personalization, you know, some of the biggest platforms on the planet have been about personalizing content. Netflix, your news feed, your news, your microblogging, your memes, etc., etc. So here's an opportunity to have personalization and adaptation of music at scale. The other thing that we've got in this vast amount of music that we have out there, probably the biggest issue our industry has is about music discovery, if you're a consumer, or if you're a producer of music, recommendation. How do you get the music out there? AI is a fantastic tool in order to be able to create massive efficiencies there. And, you know, the opportunity to be able to license this music, I'm sure at some point we're going to be talking about licensing. The opportunity for music detection at scale, and then real-time licensing as well. You know, everyone is focusing on one aspect of music AI, which is generative music that has copied other people's works. But actually, there's a huge amount of music out there that doesn't do any of those things, that needs to get into the right ears or into the right hands. And these technologies are fantastic at matching. Look at how AI works for dating apps. Look how it works in relation to shopping. Look how it does. These sorts of problems that we have as an industry can be solved by this. And then we get the wonderful stuff like democratizing music, improving access for music education, globalization, being able to get a new genre of music there, virtual instruments, production costs. It's almost more difficult to think of the things it can't do than actually begin to list all the things that it can do. And those are the elements that I really think, you know, back to Yudakovsky's point about understanding AI, let us as the music industry understand all the things it can do for us, rather than be focused on this big existential ball in the sky that is coming at us, which is how I fear a number of people are perceiving AI.
Let's talk about one of those existential balls. The major labels seem to be, cutting corners a bit here, but they're fretting a bit, it seems, about the implications of music generating AI, cloning someone's voice, creating music under the guise of somebody else. And we're hearing a lot about that because it's tangible. We hear a song featuring a AI weekend and go, hey, that's kind of okay. Like, what does that mean? You know? So without getting too bogged down in the legal weeds, are they right? I know you've just spun the positive there, but are they still right to have this hesitancy around it of saying, wait a minute, you've just copied the voice of an artist that we work with and we didn't ask you to do that and they didn't ask you to do that and you created something which sounds plausible. Is that a reasonable starting point for them?
Well, let's talk about how the music industry is using it. And I will come on to that question and I'm not going to duck it. Okay. The thing I would say to major labels, and I speak to them very regularly about this subject, is that you've got to understand in an arms race, the other side haven't ducked AI. The DSPs and the platforms have been preparing themselves to understand and use these tools for a very, very, very long time. You know, you've got Spotify acquiring Sonalytic and François Pache's team. You've got TikTok acquiring JigDeck and SoundCloud acquiring Musio, and Apple are reported to have been active in this space, and Google unleashing these tools. There is a sense from the music industry that, oh, it's not fair that those guys have got all these tools. It's like, well, all of those tools were available to you. And very few of that was about generative copying music, copying voice, et cetera, et cetera. And you sit there mystified, wondering why they're doing so well, right? So that's one of the things I would say, is that fretting about it in and of itself isn't a fantastic way of being able to do that. Fear-based decisions, without trying to sound too much like a psychologist, don't tend to usually be the best. Now, on your question about major labels, look, I understand the concerns. I used to work for a major label in the 90s. I was in charge of the business affairs for a new media for a while. I understand the business. I understand the rights. I understand the concern for artists. And I need to be super clear. Piracy is piracy. Copyright infringement is copyright infringement, and it's illegal and it's wrong. And there's no two sides about any of that. But focusing on one element of bad behaviors from bad actors or hoping the technology goes away, I mean, this has been a tried and tested response to various technological advances.
Yeah.
But I can't see any recorded example of it being helpful or making us more money or working in our favor. So really what we should be doing, you know, and again, I will come to those points, I'm sure, with regard to the legal points. But If we can use and understand these tools to enhance and scale and amplify your catalogs, you've got to do this fast. And the other reason why I think the major labels do need to be thinking about this is there are so many new entrants to the market now that are going to use this, away from DSPs and platforms. And I know DSPs and platforms have been told they can't use generative AI works or pirated works, etc., which I have no problem with whatsoever. But there are new platforms with unsigned artists, new artists. There are financial institutions that are buying up rights, gaming companies that are moving into the space, using music for what we were used to allow to call the metaverse. And they're going to use this stuff as well. So in a world where your platforms are using it and these insurgents are using it, I think it's absolutely right that the incumbents find the right way to use these technologies in order to be able to do that. And that is the most productive way to be doing it. I'm not saying don't focus on piracy. I'm saying let that be, just make it half of what you're doing. Because if you spend the other time focusing on the good stuff as well, guess what? You'll have a balanced, sophisticated, nuanced approach to this fantastic new technology, which could make you a huge amount of money.
Is part of this, I mean, we've seen big technologies come along and upend the music industry a few times, and we've seen the responses, and apparently the music industry has learned from that, and we're finding out now whether that's the case. But is part of this the fact that AI is so overwhelmingly impactful that it's very hard to see the future dynamic? It's easy to see in a limited case, someone takes this voice, clones it, puts it on a song, puts it out there. That feels wrong, right? That's clear. But then we're also talking about a total shifting sands situation here, where is what we're seeing essentially the music industry, whether it likes it or not, has now changed, and it needs to live in this new AI infiltrated world. And that cascades all the way down to artists as well, who are perhaps fretting that they might not perform as well in the future because they're being upended by, you know, AI. If you shake the ground beneath your feet, you will feel scared, won't you?
Yes, you will. And also, I completely appreciate that concern. And the reason why AI is different from just a new format of delivery or new format of taking out music is that it is going, because they've had 10 years of neural networks and 5 years of these large language models, it is going to be embedded. It's going to be embedded in your browser, in your emails, in your every device that you hold, et cetera, et cetera. So it does feel to a certain extent really, really seismic, and it can feel existential. Actually, on a related subject, you know, dealing with sort of futurology, as I often have to do, the one thing I think that people do is we're as human beings, and we're focused on great replacement theories. The other is going to come and replace us, another tribe, another country, another color, another creed, another sexuality, etc. And a lot of that born is, a heady mix of fear and sometimes ignorance and sometimes just a very human want to continue to exist. I get all of that. But one thing I would say from a business perspective is that we're so worried about losing business. The one thing I guarantee will change is the business model. So, for example, 25 years ago, and I was there, there was a view the internet would kill the music industry. It didn't. It just fundamentally rewrote its business model. The business model of music now is entirely different to how it was in the 90s. So the real question is what's it going to do for the business model of an artist? What's it going to do? So I work with a text-to-speech AI voice company, and you speak to a voiceover artist and they're terrified. Absolutely terrified.
Yeah,
it means
for sure, yeah.
And then you say to them, well, look, how about we record your voice once and you get paid on every use in real time? And you get paid in every language in perpetuity, and it could be tracked. And they go, oh, hang on, I used to just get a one-off fee. This could be really quite interesting. So then I come back to the issue of what's it going to mean for the business model? How do we make it extensible? And if you look at that, may or may not have, garnered huge amounts of attention. But what Grimes was saying, any of you can clone my voice. I want to get paid and I want to get credited and I want to share. And that for me is just the start of being able to demonstrate that there are new models here for artists rather than that kind of one and done, which whilst it might feel very, very, sort of comforting in the way it was always been done, there are opportunities here for new models for artists, for voiceover actors, for people to be able to extend things like imagery, etc., in a way that haven't been there before.
We've heard a lot of conversation about the legal implications, and I would like to touch on that a little bit, particularly around songs we mentioned that are created using AI, using someone else's voice, an existing artist. And there was the famous example of the Weeknd being used on a track. And you just mentioned Grimes there, which is all sort of in agreement, and that's okay. But let's think about the ones where it's not been agreed in advance. What's the legal reality of that situation? Are there legal protections in the sense that for an artist whose voice is being used by someone else? Because it's like the traditional licensing model is you create a thing, you license the thing. And here, it's there's a set, you could argue that no copyright is being infringed in a sense that it's absorbed the essence of someone's voice and made something new. So is there a clear legal reality here that we can look at, or is this just something new?
It's just a new way for the music industry to look at things. I'll put my legal hat on. I'm going to give the most irritating answer that clients love.
Which is,
well, look, it's not that straightforward at all. It really does depend, right? But look, most people are clear on what it means if you've trained on or simply adapted recorded music in compositions. It's copyright infringement, right? And as you said, now we're seeing a next generation of sound alikes that don't touch the traditional rights, which don't necessarily sit with the right people, you know. A record company tends to have the exclusivity over the recorded music performances of a particular artist or performer. The music publisher will have certain rights with regards to the lyrical composition and or underlying composition and or, you know, neighboring rights and attached rights there too. We in the music industry, we tend to have these lanes, as it were. And now we'll be coming into things like voice music. We're dealing with other species of IP, like passing off and image rights, trademarks. And I have to say, historically, these are issues that artist managers and their representative haven't really focused on as much. Now, I say that in contrast to, say, my TV clients. Now, perhaps I can sort of illustrate this a bit by way of analogy. So we don't have a format right in the UK. The UK is one of the leading producers of TV formats in the world, but we don't have a format right. When somebody infringes one of my clients' formats, I use a sort of a heady mix of bit of trademark, bit of passing off, confidential information. They've ripped off the set design. You've got, you know, design rights, copyright, and script, et cetera, et cetera. And breaking it down, using that package of rights, that's how we do it at core. So the same sort of thinking needs to be applied. Has it been a voice? Has it been a face? Has it been an image? Has it been all of the above? And those are the ways you do it. But unfortunately, you can't say, hello, I'm the exclusive licensee of the copyright in that sound recording, and therefore this. That's one of the things that has confounded the people that don't necessarily have those rights. And, you know, a sort of a surgical and precise cocktail of medicine needs to be applied, dependent on the case.
Does that mean that, you know, obviously those laws that you just mentioned were built in sort of in response to or in parallel to technological innovation? But does that mean that there's space for new laws that are more in tune to the capabilities of what AI can do?
Well, copyright is a highly, despite what some people may say or may portray, it is a highly flexible and resilient concept. You know, it's done us well for 300 years. And, you know, in the same way that people used to think that the internet didn't apply, copyright didn't apply to the internet or didn't apply to social, whatever, it's just nonsense on wheels. I think probably the biggest concern, and one of the things I think the industry rightly is concerned and focused on, is to make sure that we don't get swept up in some exceptions from a copyright perspective. Now, you need to understand what are governments about. You know, what do governments care about? They care about jobs. They care about the economy. Those things are linked. And they care about things like pandemic, with regard to that. You know, the top of every government's risk register is a pandemic. So at the moment, there are people within governments who are saying, hang on, we need to allow AI to train on all the world's information, health records, data, et cetera, to solve these huge problems. And that's one of the reasons why governments are sort of trying to put these exceptions in place in order to be able to allow people to solve these really hard problems. We can't allow these other rights to be in place. My message to governments, my message to MPs, my message is to select committees, all these people, is that the music industry has problems to solve, but music isn't a problem that needs to be solved. And actually what we do need to do is make sure that there are the appropriate exceptions for any of this kind of training data that have been allowed, is allow AI to go away and solve those problems. But let's not get swept up in that, because that could be quite dangerous for our industry. And it's something that, you know, the likes of the BPI and UK Music and the labels have been rightly focused on and vocal about, in my view.
We talk about the sort of glamorous side of AI is, you know, pressing a button and a song falls out of something. But what about bring up the thorny old issue of, wouldn't it be great if there was a universal database of metadata. Is this the? Do you think that's the? I mean, I don't want to nail you down to saying something you might regret later. But is that the kind? I mean, we're talking about big problems that have proven impossible to solve for political reasons or for technological reasons. Is this the kind of thing that we could actually see a breakthrough here and go, oh hey, now we left it running in the background for overnight, and now we have that database. Is that the kind of thing that could come over this?
Well, I hope so. For those of us of a certain vintage will remember things like the Global Repertoire Database and the ability to create that. And my view is that whilst people pointed at various issues, really there wasn't the political will. There was a view that actually it would create a kind of centralization of power or would be the first or next or essential step to blanket licensing or statutory licensing, which I don't hold with, really, I have to say. Mm. You know, when industries sort out their data and communications interoperability issues, history has found out that you can make more money. You know, the global standards of mobile just changed the mobile industry overnight just by making sure everyone could track every call that happened on every network. Mm. And say with app stores, et cetera, they've been done. So my hope when it comes to that, and you do hope to nail me to the wall, Joe, so that, is that we're now at a point where actually a global repertoire database and or a single source of truth using something, again, we're not allowed to mention potentially something like blockchain, AI and blockchain as well, could solve these significant machine learning problems and solve issues with regard to that. Working with interesting companies like SeaWorks that using machine learning tools in order to be able to spot the anomalies in data and data chains. And that now that we as the music industry need to know and be able to find out what the provenance of an issue is. And of course, if we do move to a world where there are more interpolations and mashups and more derivative works, we need to be able to make sure we do this. So again, AI for me represents potentially a huge opportunity for us to be able to move to that more effective or innovative licensing that we need to see in order to be able to make sure that we all get paid. I am a very, very big fan of the music industry getting paid. And I can point to a dozen examples of where we have failed to license and lost money. And I can't think of a single example where we'd had more licensing that didn't lead to more money. So let's make sure that we can get paid. Often when I'm speaking to young artists or to labels, why are you going on about this metadata issue? And I say, look, if I ask you to, you know, do some work for me in my house and clean my garden, do you expect to be paid if you don't give me your bank account sort code? No. Right? Well, it's that. Right? If there isn't the means to pay you, you're probably not going to get paid. If there isn't the ability to be able to track the work and be able to flow that through. I'm not saying that AI is a magic wand in the same way. I never said blockchain was a magic wand or digital was a magic wand. But these tools can help significantly solve some of our biggest problems.
Yes, and it just feels like, you know, you mentioned the B word there, but let's bring blockchain in for a second, just as it just feels like that the sort of a set of tools, AI plus blockchain plus some sort of different regulation around payment plus an enhanced model or a change model of paying for, let's say, streaming, that suite of tools could actually create a brand new paradigm of payment, let's say, I'm always thinking of artists at the sort of the thin end of the long tail, you know, who are looking to get paid more. It could make a fundamental difference, perhaps.
Now, for me, Joe, I've always seen, you know, sort of AI and blockchain like strands of DNA, right? So if you do have an artificially intelligent, algorithmically real-time world, having an unhackable single source of truth that can't be manipulated sounds like a good idea to me, and vice versa. So the only technology I think that would actually keep up with AI could be blockchain. And the only technology that can do vice versa as well would be AI working with blockchain type technologies as well. So rather than us seeing one or other as the magic bullet, it's the magic cocktail of the two, along with the political will and being able to then come up with these more innovative and effective licensing regimes. That for me is the holy trinity for how we get paid in the future.
I mean, I was going to ask you as a final question, what do you see happening in the next 5 or so years of AI-related technologies in the music industry? And I guess you've touched on that a bit there, which is, you know, those kind of unified innovations working together. But is there anything else perhaps we should look out for that you've spotted on the horizon that we've perhaps not thought about?
Well, look, I mean, you know, 5 years ago, I was asked to predict the next 5 years of digital music. And my response was that I felt the industry was going to become distributed, dynamic, and democratized. Now, as well as handily being alliterative, I'd say that wasn't a bad guess, really. As powered by AI and blockchain, actually, was my whole point. And I was very much thinking of a kind of a TikTok-y type world. Even though I didn't know it was going to happen in that way. That's what I could see and happening, because just that's where all of the everything was pointing. For the next 5 years of AI and music, well, look, you know, as a sci-fi geek, and this is sci-fi technologies, there's a dystopian view and there's a utopian view. Okay. So you've got the utopian view. Look, the good news is we're starting to see the industry use AI tools to solve some of their problems. You know, you see labels using Rota for their lyric videos and their canvas, and MyPath for search, and Darcy for social, and businesses like Round for social music detection. And there's an increasing enhancement on that. And you're also seeing, Universal announcing deals with Endel for so-called functional music, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the good news. The bad news is that we go back into the stance that I've seen: deny, deflect, destroy, shut it down, shut down the internet. We fail to innovate on the licensing. Consumers find a way to use this technology. And, an insurgent that no one saw coming uses this technology in a way that we didn't have. And one thing is very, very clear is that consumers will find a way to use this technology, because it's going to be embedded in every other element of their lives. Every headset, every game, every social platform will have some sort of co-pilot. It'll be baked into every Microsoft product, AI, et cetera. So if we don't get those guardrails in place, those licensing models in place, the really effective ways of being able to do that, then we head for a more dystopian view of meaning that actually we don't get paid. You know, we don't find a way to embrace opportunities for rights holders and creators and authors, that we don't understand. We haven't found a way of building a new business model while we've got this very small window in order to be able to put it in place. There are whole new vistas of dynamic music. There's whole new vistas of what it means in relation to be able to get paid in real time, to use real time for personalizations and digital worlds. And really, that's where I think that could happen, really. So the real question is, let's stop being binary and take a sophisticated and nuanced approach to balance the integrity issues of rights holders and creators, but also understand there's a market out there of consumers and a whole new world of consumers that want to pay us for these wonderful things we create. We just need to give them a way to do that. And for all the musicians or the rights holders or labels playing out there, you know, my final cheery thought would be, if you're worried about what it'll do to the music industry, just think about what it's going to do to the lawyers.
Yes, I'm sure a lot of goodwill and or business will be coming your way.
I meant in relation to replacing lawyers.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Oh, no. I'm just talking about, if you look at and break down most of the tasks that lawyers do, you know, it's proofreading, it's admin, it's due diligence, it's contract drafting, et cetera, et cetera. Oh my goodness, there, with my other hat on, there are some incredible tools out there. And again, it's not going to be the end of lawyers, guys, but it's going to fundamentally rewrite the business.
So you're going to have to change as well. We're all changing.
You know, Joe, if only I thought about pivoting and setting up an advisory business 10 years ago. But anyway.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, the good news is that us journalists are not going to be impacted by this in any way.
No,
and we'll just keep on grinding out copy as normal. thanks for that, Cliff. I'll put a link to a couple of your different hats around the podcast. Then the final question is, of course, if you could only listen to one piece of music for the rest of your life, what would it be?
If I could listen to the final medley on Abbey Road over and over again, I'd be very, very happy.
That's a good choice, and not one that has been suggested before. And also, I will say that's a strategic move, isn't it? Because there's a lot of little songs in there.
You saw what I did there.
Yeah, Yeah, very, very smart. Okay, I will link to that as well for people to listen to. Cliff Lurie, thank you ever so much.
Thank you, Joe.
So there we are. Fascinating interview there with Cliff Lurie. We're very grateful for him joining us. As ever, there is a link to him and everything he does just beneath the podcast. If you found that interview useful, please share it on with somebody else who you think will get something out of it. And if you want to get in touch with me, I would love to hear from you. You can email me on Joe, J-O-E, at musically.com. Don't forget, we also have a free weekly email called The Knowledge, which rounds up various bits and pieces of the analysis, news, marketing insight and skills that Music Ally publishes every single week. There's a link below the podcast. Sign up and immediately become a better person. That's it from me this time. Thank you for joining us as ever here on the Music Ally Focus podcast. I've been Joe Sparrow. You've been you. And until next time, farewell.